There's no way I'm going to the Philippines. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review Black Cobra 2, starring Fred the Hammer Williamson. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less, and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. Last year, I reviewed the first Black Cobra film, starring Fred the Hammer Williamson as Robert Malone, who sometimes they call him Bob in these movies. And I know for whatever reason, Bob is a nickname for people whose name is Robert. I don't know why that is the case, but I know that's a thing. But Fred the Hammer is not Bob. He is Robert. Please address him as Robert Malone in these movies, please and thank you. I know these movies came out in the 80s and 90s, so what's done is done, but he's Robert Malone, not Bob. There's something about Bob. There's a Bill Murray movie. What's the matter with Bob? The thing about Bob, what is that Bill Murray? Oh, that's going to bother me. Anyway, someone's yelling it at their device as I'm trying to bumble my way through the title of that movie. The thing about Bob is that, like, I think it's also not just like a nickname, but like a personality type as well. And like, when I look at Fred the Hammer, I don't see Bob. I definitely see Robert. That fits well, but I don't see Bob. Anyway, the Black Cobra films are inspired by the Sylvester Stallone film Cobra. One big difference, though, between Cobra and Black Cobra is that there were a lot of Black Cobra films. Today I'm talking about number two of four. There are four of these movies. I don't know if it's because they were popular or easy to make. These are Italian blaxploitation films, meaning that it's a blaxploitation film made in Italy, kind of like a spaghetti western. And that was definitely a thing obviously back into the 60s with like spaghetti westerns all the way through, of like shooting films in Italy was cheaper for whatever reason. So this is an Italian blaxploitation film. I don't know if that plays a factor into the reality that there ends up being four of these Black Cobra films, but this became just like Robert Malone became like a little bit of this, you know, character that Fred the Hammer got to continue to reprise over and over and over again. The good news is that if you have not seen the first Black Cobra, you don't have to watch Black Cobra 2. We'll see if that actually continues with the rest of these films. But basically, if you didn't watch the first one, but you decide to check out the second one, you're not gonna miss much. They basically like give you the groundwork of what you're dealing with here within the first 5 minutes of the film. If you are interested in checking out this movie or the first Black Cobra film for that matter, I did see that Black Cobra 2 is available on Tubi, but if you want to go an even easier route, Black Belt Magazine has a whole movie section on their YouTube channel, just free movies to watch. Both of them are on there. I watched both movies through Black Belt Magazine's YouTube channel, and there's a link in the description of this episode for Black Cobra 2 on the Black Belt Magazine YouTube channel. Another reason why it is okay if you did not see the first Black Cobra film, but you're interested in checking out the second one, is the fact that the second one's actually better. I enjoyed this one more. I think it is an improvement from the first movie. When it comes to the first movie, which is the one that follows more closely to the Stallone Cobra film, one thing... like, it's fun to watch that, but honestly, outside of, like, the opening sequence for Black Cobra, I don't really remember much of the rest of it, if I'm being honest. The opening sequence is good. Both movies have a cold open, and both movies feature Fred the Hammer wearing a really cool jacket during the cold open during the first movie. If you recall, if you listened to that review, the movie opens with like a community like health center has been taken hostage for some reason, which is always encouraging for somebody who works at a YMCA. So he shows up to do like negotiations to like release the hostages. But of course, he just ends up killing all the bad guys, right? But he shows up in like this long black leather trench coat. Yes, think The Matrix. And he shows up so that way he can conceal the fact that he's packing like this huge gun to blow away the bad guys. Black Cobra 2, similarly, opens with this like kind of cold open of him being involved in busting a drug deal. But this time the jacket is even cooler because he's wearing a bright blue Chicago Cubs jacket. Because folks, you have to remember this movie came out in 1989, which, if you do recall, the 80s and early 90s, there was a bit of a pop culture obsession with the Cubs. The Chicago Cubs were kind of a popular pop culture. Part of that had to do with the fact, what about Bob? That's the name of the movie. I knew I would come around to it eventually because I was about ready to bring up Bill Murray again. Bill Murray, Chicago native. John Cusack, Chicago native. Like, there were a lot of Chicago native actors and directors who got popular in the 80s. And so that just kind of became like a part of a lot of 80s films. Was like, yeah, we're from Chicago, so we're gonna pepper Chicago in. Fred the Hammer, he's from Gary, Indiana, which is just like right over the border from Chicago. I would know that for a fact. And I also know all this because I'm a Chicago Cubs fan. He's, you know, Gary's right over the border from Chicago. So a lot of his movies, you know, he's like a Chicago cop. He's a Chicago cop in this movie. In Three the Hard Way, they go find, you know, Jim Brown goes to Chicago to go pick up Fred the Hammer's character. And I think also that was during the time period where the Cubs really picked up their whole lovable losers nickname, because they were bad. Don't get me wrong. It was a bad time for the Cubs, but they had a lot of really likable people on the team at the time. They had a lot of just like guys who loved baseball and loved being Chicago Cubs. And you had Harry Carey calling from, you know, calling the games and the whole bit. And like, I know somehow I tricked you all into listening to a Chicago Cubs podcast. I'm not going to do that to you. I should not start a Chicago Cubs. I don't want to be a sports podcaster, at least not that kind of. No, I shouldn't do that. Anyway, so back to the movie. So the movie opens with this like cold open, and it obviously in the end, Fred the Hammer like kills the guy doing the drug deal, right? And you know, they go back to the police station, and the chief is, you know, reading him the riot act. You're one loose cannon cop there, Malone. You know, the whole bit, you know, the whole like, first, we love a loose cannon cop in film, but as soon as Chicago cops do whatever they want, or any cop for that matter, starts doing whatever they want in the real world, there are consequences for such things. And I want to apologize right here because I wanted to watch this movie because I knew it was easily accessible and I like Fred the Hammer, but I do recognize the fact that this is a bit of bad timing because this month we have had a lot of shootings with ICE. ICE has been killing people and working as not just like law enforcement, but like judge, jury, and executioner of anybody who happens to make their life mildly inconvenient. So, yeah, I apologize for the timing aspect of this. Also, take a hike, ICE. Get out of Minneapolis. Anyway, so back to the movie. So the chief of police has an idea because he needs a break. He needs a break from Fred the Hammer just running around doing whatever he wants to bring about justice. Because, again, we love the concept in movies of like a vigilante doing working above the law to really bring down the real bad guys, right? But obviously for the chief of police in every one of these movies, this is just like taxing because it apparently the chief of police in these movies are the only one who lives in the real world where you just can't do that kind of thing. You just can't be a rogue cop doing whatever you want. Sorry, the 1980s, you just can't do that. So here's the solution then is the fact. The solution is that Malone has now been assigned to a transfer program where he is going to be moved from Chicago PD to work with Interpol on a case, kind of like on an extended vacation, couple week vacation, just to kind of like do office work with Interpol. And Fred the Hammer's like, great, send me to France, please. And he's like, no, you're going to Manila. So here's the thing about all that. Any protests, great little bit of comedy here. He's like, he says that line that I just opened the show with of, there's no way I'm going to the Philippines. And then it immediately cuts to an airport and somebody saying to him, welcome to the Philippines. Like, it's a good bit of comedy there. Good work there. But here's the thing. Is that actually a scenario that can happen? Is foreign exchange student a thing that happens in law enforcement? Like, I can see it maybe like locally if, you know, you're working on a case and like, you know, maybe there's like a blurriness of jurisdiction. So a couple different like police stations comes together to work on a case, or maybe somebody who's like really good at something gets transferred to another station to help them out. Like, I could see maybe that happening, but like, okay, I'm tired of you. I signed you up for a foreign exchange student thing where you're going to go work with Interpol on the other side of the world. Is that really local law enforcement or Interpol agents who are, for whatever reason, listening to this show? Is that really a thing? Is foreign exchange students like a thing that you do of like, anyway, so I, because there was something about that was like, that doesn't seem like that should happen. But he gets sent over to the Philippines to work with Interpol. It's supposed to be like he's going to be doing like desk work assignments, essentially. But of course, this is going to escalate into him doing a, you know, full blown case with Interpol. And it is kind of interesting how the series of events works out, because while he is at the airport, just like, you know, going through customs the whole bit. And again, we can all take a nice little laugh and chuckle for pre-9/11 airports. Man, it's just, I was in a brief conversation with somebody I found on Instagram who is a movie producer who, you know, when she does these, she makes these reels where she sits down and she'll watch a movie and just call out everything she sees of like, ooh, bad wig alert. Ooh, I never recognize that location. Oh, that extra sure really does want to be in the camera light. You know, the whole thing. And there was whatever movie she was watching. She goes, pre-9/11 airports, simpler times for all of us. The most unbelievable part of the first two Home Alone movies is the airport stuff. I can totally believe that Macaulay Culkin can take care of himself. It's the airport part that's like, wow, that is so dated now. And it's just like, airports used to be like the Wild West almost of like, yeah, you could just like come and go, do what you want, like whatever, smoke on the airplane, who cares? Like, this used to be like a whole weird thing, and now it's, we have so much, and it's for good reasons, don't get me wrong, like, let's go, let's have safe flights, but Yeah, anyway, so he's at the airport, and while he is there, he gets pickpocketed by a petty thief. But he obviously wants to get his wallet back, so he talks to the Interpol agent. They actually kind of know about this guy. He kind of is just like a scam artist dude in Manila. So they go find him, and he's murdered. And it escalates from there. So you get this like murder mystery throughout the rest of the flick. And the whole time, at least for me, I'm sitting here like, it's totally the Interpol agent. Like, there's just something about how they wrote the Interpol agent that Fred the Hammer is working alongside of that I'm like, he's the bad guy, right? Like, he's pulling all these strings, right? Because the timing of his arrival for things, some of the lines, some of the facial expressions, like everything communicates that he's doing something like mischievous in the background. And spoiler, he's not. He's a fine person. He's a great coworker. He even after watching Fred the Hammer break several laws in order to bring about justice throughout this movie, is that like war crimes at that point? If you're working with Interpol, but you're from another country doing things in another country, I don't know. And I don't know international law enough, but it feels like it should be a war crime at that point. After breaking several laws and killing several people, you know, at the end of the movie, everything's back to normal and Fred the Hammer's headed back to Chicago and his partner is shaking his hand and he's like, I learned a lot from you this past few weeks. Cool, dude. Like, you learned how to like do whatever is necessary to bring about justice. And I think that's the thing is like, rather than actually like go through the system and even when it comes to protesting, like going through the system and going through the like channels that we have to try and fight for justice, bring about justice, there was this like such an obsession with this idea of like working above the law, being above the law, being above the system in order to bring about good. And I'm not going to be naive to the fact that like this isn't original just to this movie. Like Black Belt Jones and Hot Potato, that is what Jim Kelly's character is there for. He's like this gun for hire for the government to kind of get their hands involved in situations around the normal channels that they should be going through. Same with even Enter the Dragon. That's like they bring in Bruce Lee to kind of like be a guy from the outside to be able to bring down this organization. Same with Balls of Fury. Like it just keeps showing up. Yes, I brought up Balls of Fury. It's a thing that happens in the action movie genre, in the kung fu genre. It just like is not a good model or a proper expectation of how law enforcement works or should work. Like we have these channels, and yes, there is bureaucracy, there is red tape, there are issues, the systems are broken, but we need to find actual solutions to fix in broken institutions, not just like, well, he's a rogue cop and he gets the job done, so it all works out in the end. Like, no, the ends don't always justify the means. Anyway, as I said, this movie is better than the first Black Cobra film. I did find myself being way more invested and way more engaged with this movie. The soundtrack is awesome. Seriously, no joke about it. Like, watch the movie long enough just to get through, like, that opening title sequence or that opening, like, cold open I was talking about earlier so you can see his cool Chicago Cubs jacket. But just to, like, also hear the music. The music is phenomenal. I don't know if there was like ever a soundtrack released for this movie, but seriously, I would consider getting it if it was, especially if I could get it like on vinyl or something. Like it was good action music all throughout the movie. That being said, there were a couple weird sound choices. Like anytime there was a quiet walking through a hallway scene, the footsteps were loud. It was, you know, sometimes they do that and it like in movies and you can like hear the footsteps, but this was more like, like it was loud steps the entire time. Hopefully that those claps translated well. Like it was loud anytime these sequences happened. Now, I've talked about before that Fred the Hammer is a martial artist. I believe he trained in Shotokan karate. And often in his movies, he's not doing martial arts. He's usually like running and gunning throughout his films. That was different here. That was different in this movie. We got several fight sequences with Fred the Hammer in it, and I will admit it's a bit awkward. And I think it's only a bit awkward because he's a big dude. I think he played linebacker back in the day, and I've met him before. He is a tall, big man. He's got those big wrestler hands. And I think that's more so what I would expect. When I see like a big guy, I don't expect, for whatever reason, maybe it's just from conditioning of what the usual body type kind of looks like in martial art films, I don't expect big kicks and things like that. He was doing like a lot of kicks and it was fine. It looked a little awkward, but when I see like a big dude in a movie, I think I'm expecting more of like clothesline, big punches, you know, maybe some like tosses, even like maybe more like judo where you're doing like throws and tosses and wrist locks versus like kicks and punch, just like a lot of kicks. I talked about during The Ultimate Warrior with Hulk Hogan. There's a scene where Hulk Hogan's character, but totally not Hulk Hogan, did a spinning jump round kick. And I'm like, no, he did not. Hulk Hogan rarely left his feet when he was a wrestler. There's just something about a big man that certain like high round kicks, just like it just looks awkward. And maybe that's just because I'm so used to smaller guys in martial art movies, smaller women in martial art movies and in combat sports even. So it could be that. That being said, it was refreshing to see him doing some martial arts. It looks like he's doing a lot of like it looks like he does a lot of his own stunts in the movie as well, kind of like going through boxes, climbing around on things. It is 1989 when this movie came out, so there could be a bit of like a Jackie Chan influence with some of this. He's not doing any stunts near as crazy as what Jackie Chan was doing at that time period, but it could be an influence there of like he was moving around a lot more than what I'm used to seeing in his films. But the best part about Fred the Hammer's hand-to-hand combat is his fighting stance. He's like standing orthodox stance, but he kind of has his, instead of like guard up tight, he's got his hands kind of like chest level and open. So in a way, it kind of looks like Master Ken, when he does the Ameridote pose. Like, it genuinely kind of looks like that. And he's kind of got his fingers spread out in a certain way that it looks like he's posing a little bit. It's great. I think I should start, like, when I do video content for the show, maybe I should start doing like my own hand pose. Should I do the Jeff Hardy or Velocity One Finger Too Sweet? You know, I should start doing my own like hand gesture thing for this channel as well. But yeah, Black Cobra 2, definitely worth your time checking out. If anything, for the music. Like I said, it's genuinely, the music is one of the biggest selling points for this movie. If you just like that easy 90-minute turn off your brain action film, it will definitely hold your attention the whole time. I would watch it again. Would I buy a physical media copy of it? I'm gonna say no. because I think I want to get through the rest of the movies first and then decide if I want to just get like a big, I'm sure there's got to be like a 4-pack somewhere. I don't think I would just own this one. I think I need to get through the rest of them first and then decide if I would get a whole thing or just like one. Then I would maybe decide that. But time to start wrapping up this episode. So thank you all for listening. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcasts. Pass this episode along to a friend. And make sure you are following the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a review of the movie before the episode comes out. And check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, A Place for Faith and Pop Culture. Finally starting to get back on track with putting out videos over there. So please check those out. Trying to do a little bit more geeky stuff this year, so go check all that fun stuff out. And if you're looking for more geeky stuff, make sure you check out the other great shows here on the Anathow Ministries Podcast Network. We're growing, y'all. There's a bunch of new shows out right now, including Page and Pixel, where one week Page talks about a book and then Pixel talks about a video game. Then there's Your Matter Matters, a faith and science show. Theology on the Rocks has officially joined the network. There's, you know, talks of a few other shows headed our way here throughout this year. So it's exciting times here at AMP. And of course, you can listen to my sister show, My Seminary Life, where I talk about faith and theology matters. And that's it. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Got a big, exciting episode for you next time. It's, big, exciting episode for you next week. But until then, this has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at.